In 2004, I was first introduced to my first yoga class. It was at a college. It was in a basement of a dorm, and there was just a couple people in there. And I just remember thinking to myself how hard it was and just why was it so hard? And it was because I lacked flexibility. And then I went to my next yoga class, and it was in this Bikram setting. And it was hot, and we were, I had just my underwear on, and it was a awkward setting because, you're just wearing your underwear, and you're around other people in their underwear, and you're in a hot setting, and people are sweating, and it's very, it's kind of different, when you're first opened up to that. And this is in 2004, so this is when it first, not really first began, but. Yoga came in the 70s, and obviously it originated in India thousands of years ago, and we've been practicing this, basically, what it originated in 2,000 years ago, which were, made up postures, that focus on animals, and postures that most people had to practice some form of movement to get to. So they were always based on, animals or feelings and bandhas, but there was really no science behind those poses. So if you think about it, if let's just say yoga was created 2,000 years ago, or some scholars may say even longer, maybe 10,000 years ago. Let's say it was created 10,000 years ago. Let's take this science of the human body, what we knew then 10,000 years ago about the human body. Well, one, we probably don't know what they knew. Or if we do know what they knew, they didn't know what we know now, which basically means that we know a lot more about the human body today than we did 10,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 200 years ago, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. The problem with having an ideology such as yoga is that we are taking what was accredited thousands of years ago and saying that is science, or that is science-based movement, or let's base our movement from yoga, or yoga must be the end-all, be-all, best thing we can possibly do because it's been going on for 2,000 years. Well, when we start to utilize science with yoga, we kind of get our hopes up to start. We think we're going to find a remedy for everything using yoga, but then you find out that's not the case. For example, I did a study on how yoga affects individuals with autism spectrum disorder, and most of the benefits were social. Most of the benefits were awareness, social relationships, stuff like that, which I think is really important for people with autism. And if you're gonna intervene with individuals with autism, obviously, I think it's important for social interaction. But as science and practitioners and movement specialists, we look at yoga and say, well, where's the evidence that it helps the body? Okay. To become flexible, what does that mean? To become bendable, become able to move your body in full range of motion without pain. Okay. Flexibility is a concept that was utilized thousands of years ago because life was so busy, right? Because you were walking all day long, because people took 10,000 steps a day, because people had to work hard, a lot harder than they do now. And so yoga was a chance to slow down, stop working, breathe, and really just meditate. And that was the origination of yoga. Yoga itself originated through the term unite or yoke. Yoga means unite or yoke. And basically to unite or yoke with God. And so the origination of yoga has always meant to unite with God. Now, what does that have to do with Warrior Two or a handstand, for instance? What benefit is a handstand? Put yourself in a handstand. Do you feel strong in a handstand? And a lot of people are going to say yes. I feel strong. I feel stable. I feel secure. But think about a handstand as being the most vulnerable position you can put yourself in. The fact that you're putting all of your weight on your wrists, which if they don't have the prerequisites for 90 degree wrist extension, you're going to immediately injure. Two, when was the last time you put that much load on those wrists? Three, do you perform push-ups? Do you perform bench press? How well are your wrists prepared for a handstand? And then four, does your core, can your core support this? Five, do you have the balance? Six, do you have the coordination? Seven, do you have the awareness? Eight, do you have, you know, all these things, right? You have to do a handstand. And so you practice your handstand, you finally nail your handstand, you get your handstand, and now you're glued to the ground with your hands, and now you're just upside down. Just think of that. But that's probably the most vulnerable position you could possibly put yourself in. One, the fact that you're balancing on your hands. Humans don't walk on their hands and never have. Two, you have a higher chance of getting a head injury or a shoulder injury or a back injury from falling on your head. Three, is it that wise to stand on your hands? Is it that great? Is it that, like, what are the benefits? What does the science say about a handstand? Okay. And you're going to get a lot of response like, well, it's an inversion, so you get blood to the brain. Do you have to do a handstand to get blood to the brain? Do you think that all the blood pools to your brain when you're in a handstand or inversion? No. If that were to happen, your brain would explode. Your body propagates the amount of blood in the systems at all times. Whether or not you're upside down or, you know, obviously the blood's going to move easier in that direction, but it's not going to pool or it's not going to just sink in that direction and you're going to get all blood in your brain, right? They go through capillaries and they go through venules back to the heart and then they go out through the arteries, but they're not just pooling anywhere. Another thing people think about when they're performing yoga exercises, let's just say, for example, Warrior Two, when you're in the position and you have to have, let's just say, for instance, your right foot forward, your left foot is back, your right knee has to be 90 degrees, your whole foot has to be on the ground. You know, you don't want to deviate out, you don't want to deviate in, you want to, you know, keep your pelvis neutral, you want to have your hips forward, you want to have your back foot at a 10 degree angle facing in, your whole back of the outside of the foot needs to be down. There's all these rules, right? But who invented these rules? And what does the science say about these rules? And what are the long-term research studies that have been performed on these positions in the nature that they're in, such as Warrior Two? How is that going to be beneficial for, say, a lineman, a linebacker, to be passive in a position such as Warrior Two where you're vulnerable? How is that going to benefit someone like that? Is it not about the position? Is it really about the breathing? Well, let's go back to the breathing, right? So a lot of people will say, well, it's really not about the position. It's really about the breathing and the position together, the uniting of the breath and the body. Well, the uniting came with the human and God. It was a form of meditation that allowed you to reach God, okay, which was yoga. That was your yoke. The movement practice was to help you be able to sit and be still and meditate. So to be able to cross your legs and sit up and meditate. That was the purpose of creating the cross legs lotus position. And then, you know, narrative says that the positions and postures were created to help you get into the lotus position. So the reason why we do Warrior Two and Warrior Three, Warrior, all these different stretches and poses and flexibility movements, all we do this so that we can sit down and breathe. So we're sitting down and we're breathing and we're meditating and we're uniting with God, right? So that's the point of yoga. That's why we're doing it, to unite with God. So where in the science about this flexibility training or yoga does it say that it improves our movement skills, or the ability to move the body? Because if you're just passively putting yourself in positions, you may be at more risk to get injured in those positions because you're not actually developing neural drive in those positions. Now, I did teach yoga and I taught power yoga, and I don't consider that, looking back, as yoga. It was more of a total body conditioning class. It was basically doing push-ups and planks and Pilates stuff, and really just getting the heart rate going and feeling the core, and then getting into a yoga pose to stretch and relax, basically for a couple seconds. But at the same time, there's other yoga practitioners who do something opposite. You know, sit in a pose and we're just going to be in that pose for 3 minutes. For example, pigeon, which is when you cradle your leg to the ground and you extend your back leg, and then you just kind of collapse forward, right? Just stretch out that hip for 3 minutes and we just sit there. Well, that's flexibility training. Mobility training, or functional range conditioning, what I practice now, is a little bit different. So it takes each joint through its full range of motion actively, and it focuses on the joint that's being moved as a emphasis to be more specific and to cause overload and to cause the law of progression. So using strength training concepts, using scientific concepts that scientists in the training field have been using for years, okay? When we look at yoga, we look at a pose like a handstand, you know, but just because a handstand is hard doesn't mean that it's worth doing. You know, walking over hot coals is hard. Sewing is hard, as Dr. Andrea Spino would say. Taking care of a pet is hard. I mean, there's many things that are hard. So it doesn't mean we do them because they're hard. Obviously, if we want to be challenged physically, we don't have to stand on our hands to do so, but it looks cool and we like to take our pictures of it. So is it worth it? Is that goal worth it in the end? And for most people, it probably isn't, because most people don't have the prerequisites like the mobility or the strength to put their hand, you know, their legs overhead. So what I think about when I think of yoga now is I see it more as a chance to begin awareness and to begin focusing on your breath and your own body and your own movement and your own flexibility. Now, where I think functional range conditioning is going and kin stretch is going is it's talking about your whole system relating to the dynamic systems theory. It's talking about the system as a tensegrity model. It looks at the law of progressive adaptation, the law of overload, the law of use it or lose it, the law of specificity. And it takes all these principles and it applies them to joint training. But it also applies it to full body mobility, controlled awareness, and your breathing. So Dr. Moses Bernard, who's a great functional range release practitioner, he knows so much about the spine. You know, he's got his manual therapy degree, doctorate, and he's certified in functional range conditioning, functional range release. He just released this awesome spine course, and he goes over breathing. And as a yoga teacher, or former yoga teacher, you know, present yoga teacher, I can still teach yoga, I still will. I have nothing against yoga. But you also have to know the difference between what mobility training is and what flexibility or what yoga is. So when I taught yoga, I taught more of a power yoga, and we did a lot of breathing, and I would focus on belly breathing, or I would do box breathing, or I would do alternate nostril breathing. Sometimes I would just do deep breathing. And I would instruct my students to inhale, fill your belly, fill your rib cage, fill your upper chest, you know, fill your neck, and then exhale it out. And then I learned about 360 degree breathing, where, you know, I was told, you know, inhale, you can inhale into your lower back, you can inhale into your foot, you can inhale into your knee. And so I would think every time I would inhale, I would direct that oxygen into, you know, that area of the body. So that's what we kind of learned in yoga, that we could do stuff like that. And then I didn't really believe that was true, but I would do it anyway. And then Dr. Moses Bernard went over a cool video where he described breathing as 360 degrees and evenly distributed throughout the diaphragm wall, or the core of the core, right? So the core of the core, the diaphragm, which helps us breathe, goes all the way down to our pelvic bone and all the way up to our right below our chest. So we can fill, we can use this muscle to fill air into our lungs, but also we can control this muscle. And if we can control this muscle using isometric contractions, by using efforts, intensity, time over long periods of time, we can affect this diaphragm into performing, just being functionally more stable, meaning that it can, we'll be able to breathe better, we'll be able to breathe more efficiently, we'll be able to utilize our diaphragm, which will improve our oxygen function. So what he described in this breathing is, when you inhale, think about your lower pelvic bone, like right below your belly button, and there should be a pelvic bone there. And then from there and going outward, it should go up the hip and out to the side of the obliques, and then behind the obliques or the lower back, all the way to the spine in that area. Think about filling that area up first when you inhale. Okay. And then evenly distribute that air throughout your stomach and throughout your rib cage. And try not to lift your sternum or your clavicle or your shoulders when you inhale. And just focus on the area between your pelvic bone and lower chest when you inhale. And then when you inhale, hold the air and then try to tense or try to squeeze those areas near the pelvic bone, near the hip, next to the belly button, and then in the lower back region, next to the spinal cord. And think about filling and tensing those areas during your inhales and after your exhales, or after your inhales and after your exhales. And so we're going to go ahead and try that today. So what I'm going to do is, you can just kind of focus on the lower pelvic area, right above the hip and in the lower back region and the belly button area. What we're going to do is, we're going to take an inhale. And as we hold the air, we're going to try to tense or push a little bit of muscle, or try to kind of squeeze into those areas that I was talking about, the lower pelvic bone, outside of the pelvic bone, and then in the lower back area. And then exhale. And then after you exhale, same thing. Inhale. And then try to squeeze those areas. And then exhale. And then try to squeeze those areas. And then inhale. So what we're doing here is, we're actually working that diaphragm. And go ahead and keep breathing normally. And when you inhale, try not to just rise that belly open. Think about evenly distributing it across the belly and around the whole 360-degree abdomen region. So think about filling that area up instead of filling just the belly. Because if you have just the belly go outward, then you're not going to have any air go backward. And so you're going to mainly, primarily breathe a certain way that's going to kind of overuse the abdominal wall and underuse the lower back region and the outer region. So think about a 360 degree view instead of a belly breathing view or a Buddha breathing view. Okay, that's another misconception with yoga is that you need to belly breathe, and just the belly lifts like a balloon and then it deflates. So we actually think about it as a 360 degree sphere, like a soccer ball inside of there. And you're trying to go all the way around that soccer ball and keep it tense, evenly distributing that air in that region instead of just outward. So taking an inhale and filling 360 degrees and then exhaling. And then if you want to work on your diaphragm, squeeze into those 360 degree areas while you're inhaling, or after your inhale or after your exhale, or during your inhale or during your exhale. So those would be some breathing tips if you're trying to focus on the diaphragm. But just kind of squeeze in those areas around the pelvic wall in the diaphragm, actually trying to focus on contracting those muscles after or before your inhales and exhales, or during. Okay. If you want to find out more information on this, check out Dr. Moses Bernard. He's got a whole breathing lecture series that he gave out for free that I've been learning about. And he's got a spine course out as well. Thanks.